A very good morning on behalf of Teach 613. We welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Avodah Zarah Daf Beis, Avodah Zarah 2a. Pagination theoretically is page 3. And we have the privilege of starting the new Masechta. Avodah Zarah refers to idol worship and our relationship with those who worship idols. We'll have to discuss how practical this is in our time, since monotheism in some level has really swept the known world to a great degree. The word Avodah Zarah is often translated as idol worship. Literally, it would be Avodah, a service, Zarah, that is foreign. And in its original form, it was the concept of a human being worshipping something or someone other than Hashem himself, the creator, the master of the universe. So it was a foreign service. And the Mishnah tells us, Lefnei Eidein shel Ovdei Kochavim, before the holiday of these idol worshipper people, Shalosha Yamim, for 3 days before the holiday, also Losas Velosas Imoyim, you can't do business with them, Lahash Ilan Velishal Mehem, to borrow objects, to lend and borrow, dealing with objects. The Rashi points out that She'ela is talking about objects. We even have an expression, Rav Hirsch, Rav Schwab says this in Parshas Bo, that there's something called borrowing me'im from the person, where the person who originally owned it still owns it and has a connection to the object. That's how objects work when they're borrowed and lent. And there's also lahalvosan velilvos mehem, lending or borrowing money. And that works differently. That's an asset of value, and it gets transferred into value, and what's owed back is value, and not the exact dollar bills, so to speak, that were borrowed lent. So you're not allowed to do these types of transactions, mehen lefor'on velefroa mehem, or to pay back or collect from them. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, nefroi mehem, to take collection from them, that you could do. Mepnei shemetzer hulo, that'll make him sad, because he has to give up money. And the concern over here is that if you do it in close proximity to his idol worshipper holiday, it is going to induce him and precipitate him to thank the idol. And you're not supposed to influence him in that way. Amrulo, and the response was, no, even doing collections causes joy to him. Afapisha Meitza hu achshav, even though he's sad now as he gives the money, he's going to be happy in the future. Rashi says as imminently as tomorrow, he'll already be happy to have paid up the loan. And this is all inducing a happiness that he's going to attribute to the good omen of the idol and thank the idol for it. And we don't want to be involved in that. Tosfos, in the third paragraph of his commentary to this page, Dibur HaMaskil Osur, explores the obvious question, and he presents it from an interesting angle of Halacha Lamaisa, the actual practice. He writes on the fourth line, Amasam Chu HaOlam, what are people relying on? Losses for losses, Biyom Eid, Ovid Kochavim, Imayim. We'll even do business on the very holiday of the non-Jews. Why aren't we applying this rule of idol worshippers to practical observance? Tosfos explores a number of options, and our purpose is not to reach a conclusion, but to at least open up these options and appreciate what the choices of approach here might be. He says, for example, Ve'ein Lomar, don't tell me, don't say, that the non-Jews of Chutz La'aretz are not idol worshippers, but merely Minei Gavoseihem B'Yadam, They're just observing family traditions, but they don't really believe in the idols. So the wording of Tosis is ve'ein lomar, don't say it, but that's certainly a factor. Even if somebody nowadays was burning incense, but if they don't know what they're doing and they don't really mean it, and you ask them, what do you believe is the deity of the world? And they don't really believe that the stone figure that they're dealing with is anything more than a family tradition, and they don't understand the ramifications, there might be room there to say that he's not really an idol worshiper. So we need to know where all of these concepts apply. Another suggestion Tosfos makes is Shari Mishum Eva. Because of diplomatic relations with the people among whom we live, they had to temper these types of things, and the other person wants to observe what they want to observe. That's their business, not mine. Whereas the Mishnah was taking a much more hands-on approach. It bothers me that he's worshipping idols. And perhaps Mishum Eva, diplomatic relations, we don't necessarily have to impose that which the Mishnah described. Tosfos says that only helps you to a certain extent. Can't a person say, Tosfos wonders, on the first of the widest lines, that I don't want to do business right now? Certainly, for a person to choose to go into business in certain lines of business that are holiday decorations, is that appropriate? The flip side, of course, is holiday decorations. We need to know exactly what that is. No one is worshiping the holiday decoration. On the other hand, the Mishnah was describing a limitation of all types of commerce. And this all gets grouped in this basic question of what might be restricted nowadays. The other approach to this topic is to question a little bit more directly, are the people that we're familiar with idol worshippers at all? In our culture, we're dealing primarily either with Islam or with Christianity, both of which, in varying degrees, believe in God, creator of heaven and earth. The question regarding varying degrees is that Christianity, according to a significant approach in Christianity, is believing in the Trinity, which puts the Christian mentor as some sort of deity, although not everyone agrees exactly what it is that they are claiming of him. And that is termed as shituf, which means partnership. They're still believing in a God that created heaven and earth, and it could be that once that happens, for the non-Jewish world to be mishatef, to join something, is not what our Mishnah was referring to at all. The Mishnah was referring to idol worshippers. And that would explain quite a bit of leniency regarding practical cases in our culture. Again, we don't get what they wanted with the Christian mentor. He's a human being. What is it that you're doing in logic, in observance, etc.? And indeed, within Christianity, the Unitarian Church disagrees with the Trinity concept. In any case, our Mishnah would be referring to idol worshippers, and our question would be, does that exist in the culture and environment that we're familiar with? Perhaps there are idol worshippers in the world, but are we dealing with them? The Gemara towards the bottom of the page, five lines up, tells us, in the name of Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, or in the name of Rabbi Simlai, that in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take a Sefer Torah, and he's going to say that anybody who is devoted to it, Yavo V'yitol Secharo, shall come and take their reward. And the Gemara presents that initially, the nations of the world are going to come be'arvuvya, in mixed up presentation. They're not going to come each nation on its own. They're going to come all mixed up. And Hashem says, Al tichnesu lefanai ba'arvuvya. Don't come in front of me, nikbitzu yachad, all joined together. Rather, each nation on its own. And Hashem interviews each nation. The examples that are given in our Gemara are Rome and Persia. Each one claims that it did so much good for humanity. They talk about the marketplaces, they talk about the bridges, and their claim is Bishvil Yisrael, Kedei Sheyis Asku B'Torah. We kept the world running, we kept commerce going, we kept the highway system in place so that the Jews can study Torah. So they're acknowledging that they themselves were not moral, but we enabled the Jews to study Torah, and therefore we should receive our reward. And Hashem's response is, Shotim Sheba Olam, you fools, you did this all for yourself. And Hashem explains what it means, they did it for themselves, whatever their intents were with each thing, but it was very self-serving. One of the questions is, why is it called Shotim Sheba Olam, fools? Why don't we call them Shakranim, liars? And the answer that's given is, indeed, they are correct. They succeeded in all the endeavors that they did that affected the Jewish people. They succeeded because Hashem blessed them so that they should enable the Jewish people to do the things that were necessary, to have commerce, to have travel opportunity, etc. But that was not their intent, and therefore they don't get reward for it. In other words, they would like to say, we're like the Yisachar Zevulun model. We didn't study Torah, but we supported Torah, and Hashem says that wasn't your intent. You were self-serving. That also explains, on Amud Aleph, why originally they came ba'arvurvya, all mixed up. Why didn't they come nation by nation? But their intent was that if we join it in one great mass of humanity, then if anyone did good, we contributed. It's an international business setting, so to speak. And Hashem says, but that's not what happened. Yisachar Zvulun is a concept. And indeed, even a person who gives miser, so every time he's earning something towards Hashem's endeavors. But you were very self-serving. It was an expression of the time. Might makes right. Everybody was doing their own thing. To join Ba'arvuvya and claim that interaction, that global collaborative experience, is simply not true. And therefore Hashem says, each of you come in on your own and you'll have to make it on your own merit. If you don't, you can't simply tap in to the moral people and claim that you supported them. On the contrary, you made it quite difficult. The Gemara concludes this particular section by telling us that Persia and Rome, Pras and Romi, are the ones identified in the Gemara specifically because they will last as kingdoms until Mashiach comes. Rome is commonly equated with Christianity. Pras is commonly equated with the Arab world, and these are the two kingdoms that will remain dominant, the Gemara says, until Mashiach comes. Yashar Koach, thank you for joining.